The show is live and local. It's your connection to local performances. And on the program today, we will be talking with and hearing live in our studio flutist Zara Lawler, who is also a dancer, and she combines those two talents in a program that she calls The Flute on Its Feet. She's here also with choreographer C. Neil Parsons. They're going to be at Charleston's Dowdna Fine Arts Center tonight and tomorrow for workshop and performance. First on the show, however, we will be having some short excerpts live from a brand new opera called Paradise is Lost, libretto by Marcia Johnson, based on the novella by Ursula K. Le Guin, music by Stephen Andrew Taylor, who's on faculty at the University of Illinois. Steve is with us, also director Ricardo Herrera and two of the singers, to give us an idea of this world premiere, which is happening this week, Thursday through Sunday, at the Krannert Center in Urbana on the University of Illinois campus. Meanwhile, we hope to hear from you with contributions, pledges of financial support for Live and Local here on FM 90.9 during our spring pledge period. The phone number is 217-244-0025. That's our old number, 0025. Or online at willpledge.org. We'll attempt to set some goals for this hour, and we'll be talking with Heather Miller coming up on that topic. But you can get things started yourself. We have just today and tomorrow yet to support this program during this spring pledge period. 217-244-0025 or willpledge.org. That dramatic music came from Star Trek, the original series, and particularly an episode called What Are Little Girls Made Of? A suite from there, music by Fred Steiner, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. That's by way of introduction to our first topic of the day, which is a brand new opera called Paradise is Lost. It is, as you might have expected from the introduction, a space opera, fairly literally. And the music was written by a faculty member at the University of Illinois School of Music, Stephen Andrew Taylor. The libretto by Marcia Johnson, which is based on the novella of the same name by Ursula K. Le Guin. And the University of Illinois Opera Program with the new music ensemble are going to be presenting this in world premiere this week, Thursday through Sunday, at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana. Evening performance is Thursday through Saturday, and an afternoon performance on Sunday. And Ricardo Herrera, also of the University of Illinois faculty, is directing, and we have two of the cast members here with us, including, most importantly, I guess, the composer. So thanks all for coming in very much.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Steve, you asked this question yourself in your self-interview in the program, but why did you feel possessed to write a space opera? That's not exactly how you put the question, but...
Yeah, I think I said something like, why on earth would anyone want to write an opera in the first place? And the answer is, you know, because it's hard. It's like climbing a mountain. You do it because it's there, I suppose. It seems like for space operas that there's a lot of very, very successful science fiction movies and lots of very successful science fiction novels, but it doesn't seem like it's penetrated that deeply into the opera world, and so I thought it was time to give it a shot.
Yeah, you said space operas. Are there other space operas?
Believe it or not, there are. There are multiple science fiction operas even that are fairly few, but they do come out every so often. There's actually one which is similar to mine that was written back in the 1950s about a giant spaceship that's called Aniara. by Blumstadt. And that has been, you know, it was premiered in the 50s and then it was brought back again in the 90s.
Well, here's hoping that yours doesn't have to go that far before its next performances. But there, I mean, you call it, I call it a space opera, you call it a space opera. It takes place in a spaceship. This is a novella I haven't read. In fact, I'm trying to remember if I've read anything of Ursula Le Guin's, which is sort of unfortunate if I haven't. So why don't you give us an introduction to the story, to the novella, and then why, what inspired you to pick up this particular story to make an opera out of it, although I suppose you did it in consultation with your librettist, who's the one who really had to write the thing.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I've been a fan of Ursula Le Guin since I was in middle school, basically. She's one of America's greatest living writers, and she's won the National Book Award. She's basically won everything there is. This particular story came out in 2002 and called Paradise is Lost. It's about the journey of a gigantic starship called the Discovery, which takes about 200 years to go reach a new planet. And the name of this new planet is Shindichu. And when they get there, they're supposed to see if it's suitable for colonization. And if something horrible happened, you know, that it turned out that it wasn't, then they'd be able to turn around and go back home, making a total round trip of 400 years, but they're really planning on 200 years to get there. And that means that it's what's called a generation ship, because there's no magical hibernation, there's no warp drive. You basically just have to live, grow up, have children, eventually die, and then after many, many years, your descendants are going to land on this planet. And so we join the story around the year 141, which means that we're in generation 5. So that would be the equivalent of our great-great-great-grandchildren that are, you know, living now. And so they basically don't have any idea what Earth was actually like. Anybody who did live on Earth, which they call the Zero Generation, has died long ago. And the problem happens because several of them are looking for a meaning for life. And if your only meaning for life is to, you know, grow up and have kids, and then someday those kids will actually do something, you can see how there could be a sort of a trouble for justifying your existence, just trying to keep this ship running. And so what they eventually decide or discover is that everything they knew about Earth makes them think it was a hell, because it had crime and war and money and poverty and all these problems that they basically don't have on this ship, because the ship is perfectly self-sustaining. And they think that they're literally flying through heaven right now. And so they start to wonder, why should we go land on another hell? And they invent a religion that's called bliss. And they start describing themselves as angels who want to live in bliss forever and not land on this planet. They even sort of take over the education of the younger children and start introducing concepts like the planetary hypothesis, that maybe there isn't such a thing as planets. And so that, of course, becomes a problem for the people who actually do want to land on the planet someday. And all this comes to a head when they discover that because of an accident, they have been speeding up much faster than they thought, and they're going to land on the planet very soon. And so that's where the problem comes in.
Oh, there's so many questions to be asked around that, and we don't have time really to address so many of them. So I'm just going to sort of accept that as the story, but ask you a little bit about your affinity with things having to do with space, because I know that your first orchestral commission also had to do with space.
Yeah, that was a piece called Unapproachable Light that got done in Carnegie Hall back in 1996, and it was inspired by the Hubble Space Telescope and a quote from the New Testament that talks about God living in unapproachable light. And so I guess this kind of collision between science and religion has really been, you know, one of my big concerns for a long time.
And Ricardo Herrera is directing this opera, and in reading the note from Eduardo Diaz-Munoz, who directs the opera program, he said that when you first got to talking about this particular production, the initial problem was to imagine 200 years from now, or presumably from now, and what sorts of things do people have? What sort of things do people do? What sort of things do they wear? And, you know, what happened to the iPad and the iPhone? And so how have you dealt with the whole approach of setting and so on?
The story does not necessarily take place 200 years from today. I mean, it can take place 500 years from today, or maybe it started 20 years ago. We don't know that in the book, but it is definitely a futuristic story. So the challenge was to get together with the designers, with Regina Garcia and David Warfel, and say, okay, guys, so we're going to put this story in a ship, and everything has to be recyclable, everything has to be useful. It cannot be any extra stuff just for decoration. We always have to use something in this ship. They've been living with these objects for 150, 160 years. So how do we make it happen? How do we make it a real situation? So we started going through designs and many meetings. And of course, I wanted some, you know, effect of people not having any gravity sustaining them. So we wanted to have, you know, shadows or actual people floating around in the theater, but of course, you know, it's very difficult to do that without having millions and millions of dollars in the budget.
You don't?
We actually don't this year, but maybe next year we will. What we decided is to create this spaceship, and Regina Garcia came with this amazing concept of platforms that symbolize the corridors that these travelers go through in the spaceship. And they go back and forth their rooms, they go back and forth their communities. And David Warfel designed the projections, which will enhance the atmosphere where we are. If we're in the Chinese part of the story, if we're in Hiroshi's, the chief navigator house, or if we are in the part where they the Bliss people are having their ceremonies. So it's all changed with light and with the three platforms that we have created in the design. What happened to the iPad and what happened to the iPod? We don't know exactly what happened, but they probably shrunk a little bit. And now we have, you know, a sizable, you know, iPod device that can actually determine what's wrong with your body. You know, it can actually regenerate skin. It can regenerate cell functions. So in one of the scenes, Luis actually is examining a baby, and he's just scanning him with his device, and he's checking that everything is okay.
Now that sounds like straight out of Star Trek.
Well, we tried.
I will actually slip in a little bit here that at early design meetings there were talk about, you know, spandex and tricorders and so on, and we really kind of had to say, no, this is not a Star Trek kind of ship. And that actually came right from Ms. Le Guin herself. You know, she wants it to feel more almost tribal, I would say, in some ways. Mm-hmm. There's 4,000 people on the ship, and they have different ethnicities. They their culture is kind of all intermingled together, and so you'll see that in the costumes and all sorts of things.
I wanted to have a feeling of comfort, a feeling of no age in the costume. So when I talked to Regina, who's also designing the costumes, we went for fabrics, you know, cotton and just things that they can tie it with their own hands. No zippers, no buckles, no fancy robotic, you know, attire. Based precisely on what Steve is saying, so that people are comfortable and they can actually recycle that material into the next generation through their technology. But, you know, it's nothing fancy or futuristic, if we want to call it like that.
So you have to be imaginative, but not overly spacey somehow.
Correct.
Or another.
Yeah.
Sounds like a rather massive challenge. And I'm gathering that Ms. Le Guin doesn't, well, as you said, she doesn't set it in any specific time, so you don't really know what the setting is, and she hasn't said, so you have to be imaginative all around. Well, before we get to a couple of excerpts from the opera, since you happen to mention not quite having millions to put on this production, that gives me a rather awkward segue to say that neither does WILL, and this is our spring pledge period. And before we get to hear the music, we're going to hold you hostage just for a little bit while we remind you that we do need your support to make sure that this program and this station can keep running in the coming fiscal year. It's our spring pledge drive. We have today and tomorrow yet on this show to generate some financial support. And I have to tell you in all honesty that I don't think anybody called during this show on Thursday or Friday. And they often say that folks in public radio administration do pay attention to that sort of thing when determining what stays and what goes if things ever have to go. You can imagine how I feel about this at the moment. So it would personally gratify me greatly if we had at least three pledges during this hour today to make sure that we know. I know there's many listeners out there. What we also need to know is that there are many listeners who also support the station with your financial contributions, and you can do it right now by calling us at 217-244-0025 or by giving online at willpledge.org. And I have a great fan of the show right next to me here in the form of Heather Miller, and I appreciate your coming in and joining us.
Absolutely, Kevin. I find this program completely engaging. It's compelling. I thoroughly enjoy listening to it over my lunch hour. And today's another day where it's just fascinating to hear all the challenges that go behind the scenes. We're getting a behind-the-scenes glimpse of how this opera is built. We get to hear the storyline challenges and the set design challenges. And we wouldn't have that if we didn't have Live and Local. And so our challenge today, which I'm issuing to you, the listener, is to give us a little support for a program like Live and Local with your phone call, 217-244-0025. Step up, take that challenge, make that pledge. We have 2 days left on our spring fundraiser, and we need to hear from you right now. This type of show where you get all of this interaction with the components and the people involved is terrific, and it's a great way to have an understanding of what goes on in our community in terms of local arts. And you get that because Live and Local is here for you. We're asking you to be here for us right now. Give us a call, 217-244-0025. Make a $52 pledge today.
Three calls is our goal for the hour. That's about as modest as it possibly can be, but we have 40 minutes in which we can hear from you. 217-244-0025 or willpledge.org. We have support not only from our listeners, but also from Trent Shepard in recognition of the Artists Against AIDS art show featuring over 200 artists April 26th through the 29th at the McKinley Fitness Center, 500 West Church Street in Champaign. More information is available at artistsagainstaids.com. We have our first of two excerpts from Paradise is Lost, which is the new opera by composer Stephen Andrew Taylor with libretto by Marcia Johnson. And our guests who are going to be performing with us are both in the cast that will be appearing on the 27th and 29th. The opera program at the University of Illinois typically double casts its lead roles, and they have done so for this one in the character of, does she say it, Xing? It's Milie Kwan. And then in the role of Luis is Alexander Indalakat, who has actually been on this show before, but Milie is here first time. What are you going to be, can you set up the context for this particular song for us? Or Steve.
I can take in Milie. It looks like she has a deer in the headlights look. Yeah. So Milie plays Xing, who's a young woman on the ship who is a poet. And so she is reciting a poem that she has just written for her class. And so I guess the point is that even though they're on this giant starship that takes 200 years to go to another planet, life is pretty much like it is anywhere else.
Steve Taylor is at the keyboard here on Live and Local. Thank you. That's really beautiful. I did have a chance to hear some of the orchestrated portions of the opera in early form from, I guess, sort of workshop settings where you did this over the last several years, Steve, and was really struck by the beauty of the music, the ethereal quality, as you ought to have, I guess, in a space opera, but so much of it. A lot of it is very delicate sounding, as that was there. And so here we have kind of a story within a story, you know, with the poem, although not itself a story. But I'm gathering that in making selections from this novella, which of course is very difficult to put into a two-hour opera, that you and Marcia had to make some really judicious choices about what scenes to put in, what moments to put in. This clearly a moment.
Yeah, one of the things that really drew me to the story is that the Gwyn, you know, is a very accomplished poet, as well as an expert storyteller, and this marriage between storytelling and poetry, is part of what makes opera great, and that's part of what I think makes this story a really operatic story.
Mili Ekwon sang the role of Shing here from Paradise Is Lost, by Steve Taylor, and Alexander Iden Delicato is next. What is the what's this particular scene in the context for this one?
This is directly following Millier's poem. She and I do a duet together. I take her reading device. I ask her if I could see her reading device to look through more of her work because I have a crush as Luis. I have a crush on Shing, and I wanted to see the rest of her poetry. And I found another poem that Luis is kind of a dense character. Shing and Luis both like each other, but they won't admit it to each other. They grew up together from birth. They've been close friends for a long time, and this is something that I discussed with Professor Herrera in depth. Because we grew up together, our friendship and our bond is so strong that the romantic element of our friendship never really takes off because there is that disjuncted relationship between friendship and romance. We never really crossed that boundary until very much later into the opera. But this is just me singing this poem that was actually written about me, but I didn't know about it. So I don't know it at the time.
Okay.
So yeah, and then she comes in at halfway through and sings it with me. So
Alexander and Delicato with Steve Taylor here on Live and Local from Paradise Is Lost.
What is the sadness in you that I see only in your smile? I wish I could hold your sadness in my arms like a sleeping child.
What is the sadness in you that I see only in your smile? I wish I could hold your sadness in my arms
like a sleeping
child. What is the sadness?
Like a sleeping.
Is the whole opera that beautiful?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. Yes. You guys.
Yes, it is.
And his piano production, I was actually talking about this with a couple of the singers, does not do justice at all to the orchestration. It's a beautiful piano production, but what Professor Taylor is able to do with a full orchestra creates just amazing context for the ship and the relationships between characters way more than a piano could ever do. It's absolutely beautiful.
So. Yeah, it's not a large ensemble, but it's a, you know, and I think that was one of the restrictions that was set up at the beginning. It had to be orchestrated for more or less a particular group.
Yeah, we've got 19 players plus a laptop, which controls a set of speakers that surround the audience.
Appropriately enough for a spaceship.
Well, yeah.
It seems. Well, I wish, frankly, we had the rest of the hour. We could explore all the other sorts of ins and outs of the creation of a world premiere opera, but we don't. We have another segment we're going to go to in just a few moments. But I want to say thanks to Stephen Andrew Taylor, who's composer of Paradise is Lost, which is the new opera being premiered this week, Thursday through Saturday, at the Krannert Center in Urbana, and also director Ricardo Herrera, both of them of the University of Illinois faculty at the School of Music, and Milie Kwan and Alexandrine Delicato, both of the cast. If you want to hear them particularly, if you immediately fell in love with their voices, they'll be on the performances on the 27th and the 29th, and they have their counterparts on the other two performances. For more information, you can go to krannertcenter.com, and best of luck with the premiere.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks so much, Kevin.
Our broadcast today on Live and Local is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available, and visits can be scheduled at 217-244-9309. Stay tuned next for my conversation with and a live performance by flutist and dancer Zara Lawler, who will be at the Doudna Fine Arts Center on the Eastern Illinois University campus in Charleston for performances and workshop tonight and, well, today and tomorrow on Live, here on Live and Local. Stay tuned. That was, who was that? I've just forgot my CD here. I'm thinking about something else and drew a complete blank. Well, I can tell you who wrote the music is Henry Cowell, a little couple of pieces he calls Two Bits. And I'll think of the flutist coming up. But more to the point, we have flutist Zara Lawler coming up, who's going to play for us live in her studio. She's also a dancer, and she combines those talents in a program called The Flute on Its Feet. But first, we need to remind you that it's our spring pledge period. Sort of the nature of Live and Local is it can be a little bit difficult to get involved in a conversation about a world premiere and then suddenly have to break out and say, can you send us your money, please? But that's the sort of thing that on public radio is absolutely essential to do now and then, because it's from you mostly that our money comes. And so a few to several times a year, we come and ask. And this is one of our major pledge drives, the spring one, where we are on an all-out push to bring in the money needed for next year's programs. And so we have today and tomorrow yet to do that during this particular period. Your phone call right now will go a long way towards ensuring success during the drive. The phone number is 217-244-0025. The web address is willpledge.org. And I understand, Heather Miller, that we have had at least a couple of pledges this hour so far.
Yes, Kevin, I'm so excited. We certainly have. We've heard from two callers so far, and we're looking for number three. We had a little goal there, a little mini goal of three. I feel like we should do three times that, because a program like Live and Local, where you get to audition upcoming events, listen to up-and-coming artists, and check it out before you actually put out coin, is very, very rare indeed. I don't know anywhere else that it happens, and you are totally in touch with everything that's happening in our community in terms of the performing arts. So let's take this resource. Let's take this program and appreciate it for the value that it truly has, and go to your phone and support it with a pledge right now. Make a $52 pledge. Call 217-244-0025. Put a little money behind supporting the performing arts here in Central Illinois. And if you've never made a pledge before, now is the time to do it.
And sometimes when you listen to a membership drive, I know I have often felt this way. Before I worked in public radio myself, you might feel like we're not actually talking to you, meaning you,
yes,
person
you.
Who's listening. And you may even feel that your contribution couldn't possibly be enough to be helpful. Well, the secret is that every contribution is important. We try to make that no kind of secret at all, whether it's a single $25 gift, perhaps an installment of $25 a month, or even more. Every listener's financial investment is valued at any level. But the most important thing is that we do hear from you. Yes, I mean you. And that's why, frankly, that our goal for this drive is not a dollar goal. It is a pledge goal, a participation goal. 1,100 people is our goal to hear from during the drive with a contribution. 217-244-0025 or willpledge.org.
And if you've never made a pledge before, it's very simple to do. We're going to ask you your name, your mailing address, your phone number. We'll ask you how much you'd like to pay. Maybe you have $40 that you could contribute to WILL. We would say thank you. That is terrific. Or perhaps you're sitting there, you've had a great year, your finances are back on track, and you'd like to make a $500 pledge. Well, trust me, we would not say no. We certainly wouldn't. But what matters most is your participation. And in these last 2 days of this pledge drive, we encourage you to put down your pen, set aside your salad, and get on your phone and give us a call. 217-244-0025. Or if you're clicking away at your desk and working, willpledge.org.
And we heard once again from, finally remembered her name. Actually, I didn't remember her name. I was prompted on her name. Carol Winsens, the flutist, and pianist Samuel Sanders. That music was by Lucas Foss. And I picked this that particular piece, which is from Foss's three pieces for flute and piano. It also exists for violin and orchestra, for that matter, called Early Song, because I happen to have heard a performance of that music by my next guest, who is named Zara Lawler. She is a flutist and dancer, and she, with Neil Parsons, are going to be presenting a program at the Charleston Dowden Fine Arts Center on the campus of Eastern Illinois University called The Flute on Its Feet, both performance and workshop. And I'm not even sure. I think it must have been your agent, Zara, who told me about this somehow or another, or somebody affiliated with you, and told me this was going on. I thought it sounded fascinating, just the whole notion that you can actually play the flute and dance at the same time, and not in any sort of capricious way, but, you know, a whole performance's worth. In any event, thank you both for coming in, and what possessed you to try to do both of those things at the same time?
Well, I've just always really loved dance, and I've loved dancing, and obviously I've loved the flute and playing the flute, and I just eventually couldn't resist trying to do both at the same time.
which came first for you?
Well, I guess technically the flute came first, although as a child, you know, it's all one big thing as a child, but I'm trained as a flutist, and really only have had my dance and theater training sort of on the job since I've been developing this work that combines the different art forms all together.
Well, when did you start? When did you start that combination?
Well, actually, I joined a company in 2000 called Tales and Scales, that was a national, still is a national touring ensemble dedicated to new music and new theater for children and family audiences. And so we performed pieces of music written for us in a highly integrated fashion, where we would dance and act and play all at the same time, kind of like opera for kids, except we all played instruments instead of singing. And in fact, that's how I got started doing that work, and that's how I met Neil, because he was in Tales and Scales as well.
And does that group come out of Indianapolis?
Out of Evansville, Indiana.
Evansville, okay. I've heard of you guys. I say you guys. Are you still involved with them?
No, not anymore.
This is the spinoff.
Yeah. Second generation.
Yeah. I mean, as a conductor, I get Symphony Magazine and often would see advertisements for this group putting on, particularly, as you say, for young concerts for young people, but working with orchestras and so on. What was your interest in getting involved with that group? Were you originally part of that group?
No, actually, the group predated and, as you know, postdated us. I was... At the time that I joined Tales and Scales, I had been working with starting a chamber music group in New York that was dedicated to combining music with other arts. So, for example, we did a performance of pictures at an exhibition in a gallery. We had members of the ensemble walking between paintings during the promenade parts, and I just thought that was a really fun way to perform. And then the job opening came in Tales and Scales, and I thought, wow, what a great way to get even better at that stuff. And I really expected only to be in Tales and Scales for about a year, but I loved it so much I stayed for eight. And now the work that Neil and I are doing has really grown out of that, and from an interest in bringing that kind of performing to, you know, honestly, a more grown-up audience, and seeing if we can take it farther than we were for kids.
Would you say that in the show, The Flute and Its Fleet, on its feet, the flute takes precedence or the feet take precedence?
That's a good question. Well, the flute certainly gets played throughout the entire show, and it's all solo flute music. There are parts of the show where I'm just playing and Neil is dancing with me. There are parts where I'm playing and dancing at the same time. And then there are also some parts where I'm playing and reciting poetry. So it's a bit of a mishmash, but I think the flute is the common element in all of the pieces.
Well, yeah, if the flute is there the whole time, then that is clear. I'm used to, in this studio, seeing one instrumentalist with multiple instruments, and you have I see that you have upheld that tradition on this studio. In this studio you have three differently sized flutes. Two of them will be pretty familiar to most everybody. You have a piccolo and you have a regular flute, but then you have this wonderful alto flute as well, which you're holding at the moment. Does that mean that's what we get to hear first?
Yep. the first piece on our program is actually a set of eight pieces by Lowell Lieberman, who's a New York-based composer, and he leaves it up to the discretion of the performer to choose flute, alto, flute, or piccolo on each of the movements of this work. So I play all three over the course of the set of eight.
Well, why don't we hear? So you're going to be playing from that piece?
Yeah.
Right now. All right.
Yeah, this is the first movement. It's called Ophelia.
Zara Lawler, live on Live and Local.
Thank you.
Music by Lowell Lieberman, played live in our studio by Zara Lawler. Zara, by the way, is spelled Z-A-R-A, the first time I heard it on the phone, because that's how I heard it. I got a call from Peter on the phone, and I thought it was Sarah, but I just want to be clear. It's Zara, Z-A-R-A. She's going to be performing with Neil Parsons, C. Neil Parsons. This is how he goes, called The Flute on Its Feet. There's a performance tonight at 7:30 in the Recital Hall at the Dowden Fine Arts Center in Charleston. And then tomorrow at 3 in the afternoon, there will be a workshop also called The Flute on Its Feet. Both events are free and open to everyone. And before we hear again from Zara and also from Neil, although Neil's not going to be playing the flute, want to remind you that it's our spring pledge period. I'm very pleased to say that our extremely modest goal of 3 phone calls for this hour has already been met. So that means, I guess, we need to up it to 5.
Oh, I think so.
We simply have to keep going to make sure that things get funded.
Her performance tomorrow may be free, but Live and Local is not. WILL is relying on each and every one of our listeners to step up and be more than just a listener. Be a supporter of a program like Live and Local. Where else on your radio dial can you tune in and hear a sampling of opera followed by a dancing flute? Nowhere. Nowhere else does that occur, but right here it does, and we do that for you each and every day. Monday through Friday, we bring in different performers so that you can get a sampling and a real idea of what performing arts are available to you right here in Central Illinois. It's a wealth of performance, and it comes to you each and every day of the week, and we're asking you on these last 2 days of our pledge drive to step up and make your $52 pledge, your $75 pledge. And if you are doing quite well and have $500 to gift WILL for Live and Local, we encourage you to do that right now with a phone call, 217-244-0025.
Or you can go online and make your contribution to willpledge.org. Please do make that call. Do make that contribution online, either or both, if you like, because it's important that we hear from as many listeners as possible. Our goal is 1,100 listeners during the course of this drive, which does end the end of the day tomorrow. At least that's the plan. Make your call now, 217-244-0025, or online at willpledge.org. Our other guest with us is Neil Parsons, who has choreographed this program, The Flute on Its Feet, for Zara. And given that all of the music is only solo flute, did that make special challenges for your work? And also that, you know, there might be one or only two dancers.
The first collaboration that we did was the Lowell Lieberman set of 8 pieces, and that was originally thought to be solo flute and solo dancer, but we soon realized that there were opportunities for her to dance with me and to be a choreographic partner on stage as well. And
so the original plan was you would be the dancer and she would play the flute and that's it.
Exactly. And the opportunity to perform with live music is one that dancers relish. So I really looked forward to that opportunity. But then realizing her presence on stage could be more than just musical accompaniment really opened up many possibilities, which then we capitalized on to great effect with a Telemann setting that we also do, where it's a full-on choreographed duet. She just happens to be playing all the notes while we're dancing a duet.
And is that what we're going to sample next?
Sure. Yeah.
I don't know what you intended to do.
Well, I was going to do one of the poetry pieces, but since we're talking about Telemann.
Yeah, why not? Roll with the punches. Live radio. That's how,
I know.
That's how
it's
things
exciting.
Go. I see you've got the whole stack of music there. So.
Yeah. Telemann wrote 12 multi-movement works for solo flute. And so in the piece that Neil and I have put together, we just took our favorites from several fantasies. So this is one movement from his 4th fantasy. ¶¶
Zara Lawler, live in our studio here on Live and Local, music by Georg Philipp Telemann. It's part of a piece that she and Neil Parsons call Fantasies, and that will feature both of them dancing. And I've seen a little bit of y'all on YouTube, and I'm actually looking at a picture right now from the website in which you're kind of in these parallel, I don't know how to describe these almost zigzaggy little poses, but I can almost imagine that movement happening in that particular music, because it's very playful music, and I can just sort of, I would think that it would be good music to dance to.
Yeah.
It's a delight to dance to.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that the symmetry that you're responding to in the picture is actually something that Neil has used a lot in the choreography, of using the flute as a visual element and finding ways for his movement to be symmetrical with, you know, I'm somewhat limited by the flute, not as limited as you might think, but somewhat limited, and Neil has found ways to move freely. He's unencumbered by an instrument, but he's found ways to be symmetrical and to capitalize on the visual element of the flute and make it really part of the choreography, conjuring up images like that photograph.
Well, I mean, the thing about the flute is you have to hold it up. So you're kind of limited that your right arm is probably in the air all the time.
Oh, actually,
while you're dancing or not.
I've really mastered the art of one-handed flute playing. So
oh, really?
My right hand is actually free quite a bit, and there are a couple of moments where I actually even get to partner Neil with my free right hand.
Oh, nice. That's got to be a pioneering maneuver right there.
I think that's something definitely that I invented.
I've heard of one-handed pianists who are only that way by necessity, but a voluntarily one-handed flutist, that's unusual to say the least,
yeah.
if not entirely unique. Well, and in this picture, you're both in what looks like black tights, probably. And is that the typical costume for your show? Or maybe not?
We keep it pretty simple, black or black and gray. We don't use props, and we don't have super fancy lighting. It's a very pared-down show, in partly to really just keep the focus on the movement and the music.
Well, I regret that we don't have time to hear another piece, because I would love to hear you play. You sound beautiful, and I really wanted to hear the piccolo as well. But we've gotten two of the three flutes.
Yeah.
Zara Lawler with C. Neil Parsons. They're going to be presenting the Flute on Its Feet in Charleston. There's a concert tonight at 7:30 in the Recital Hall endowed in the Fine Arts Center. And then a workshop on the same topic tomorrow afternoon at 3:00 in the same space. Both of those are free. So if you're in the sound of my voice and in reasonable driving distance of Charleston, then you know about it. And reminder that you know about it courtesy of this show, Live and Local. Make your call now to support the program, 217-244-0025, or willpledge.org. This is 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana, with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and more for Central Illinois. We also have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is available at thecorkscrew.com. And we're going to go out here for just a few seconds with some music that features Zara Lawler and also a colleague, Paul Fadul, from their duo called Lawler and Fadul. He is a marimbist here on Live and Local. ¶¶